Hello, and welcome to the Writing Redux podcast. I'm Beatrice Otto, and today I'm going to share with you our review celebrating the journals of Dorothy Wordsworth. Dorothy was born on Christmas Day in 1771, and she was the sister of the rather more famous William Wordsworth. They shared a home for most of their lives after having been separated for some years while growing up. I've long had an appetite for reading the letters of this or that person, but I hadn't seriously looked at journals until I read Dorothy's, and she changed that and spurred me to finish, among others, a 700-page abridgment of thousands of journal pages by Thoreau. The editor of Dorothy's journals tells us that, I quote, "There are no rules and structures for diary writing, as there are not for living. We take the fast and the slow of it as it comes." Thinking about it, what is a journal but a letter to the future? It may be written for oneself as a prompt, a memory prompt, for a year, a decade, or a lifetime from now, or it may be written for unknown readers, or friends, family, or strangers. Whoever the audience, intended or eventual, it captures moments, impressions, and details that are otherwise lost in the hubbub of living. And it can capture, at least in a snapshot, entire human lives which might vanish unrecorded. Here are two girls, quite different in mien and circumstance, of whom Dorothy's entries may be the only memory of them as living beings. I quote the first description. A little lass, about 10 years of age. She was a beautiful creature, and there was something uncommonly impressive in the lightness and joyousness of her manner. Her business seemed to be all pleasure, pleasure in her own motions, and the man looked at her as if he too was pleased, and spoke to her in the same tone in which he spoke to his horses. There was a wildness in her whole figure, not the wildness of a mountain lass, but a road lass, a traveller from her birth, who had wanted neither for food nor clothes. Then another description of another girl who has fallen on very difficult times. Dorothy tells us, "Mr. Graham took her into the chaise, and the cloak was released from the wheel, but the child's misery did not cease, for her cloak was torn to rags. It had been a miserable cloak before, but she had no other, and it was the greatest sorrow that could befall her. Her name was Alice Fell. She had no parents and belonged to the next town. At the next town, Mr. G left money with some respectable people in the town to buy her a new cloak." Very short entry, but it makes you wonder what became of Alice Fell and what became of the girl who took such pleasure in her own motions. For my part, having started an intermittent journal a few years ago, and it's more intermittent than journal, it has astonished me to realise how much of the richness and texture of life one forgets. One touching detail of Dorothy's journal is the occasional admission that she can't remember much of what happened in the last day or two, and I'm sure you've had that sense, or she only remembers in the briefest way. So a couple of quotations on this front. She says, "I have neglected to set down the occurrences of this week, so I do not recollect how we disposed of ourselves today." Another entry just says, "Hung out the linen." Another entry, another day, "Walked I know not where." Another day, she simply says, "Walked by moonlight." And then I really like this one, "Sunday, 18th of October, 1801, I have forgotten." These lapses and lacunae reassure me that a journal can be as imperfect as its writer and still worth writing and reading. Her journals wrap around the end of the 18th and the start of the 19th century, with the Alfoxden Journal of 1798 and the Grasmere Journal from May 1800 to January 1803. They are dew fresh, delightful, alert to beauty and happy moments, and all-embracingly alive. Quoting from 1800, "It was a sweet morning, everything green and overflowing with life, and the streams making a perpetual song with the thrushes and all little birds, not forgetting the stone chats. On another day, she says, I sat upon a rock and observed a flight of swallows gathering together high above my head, and they flew towards Rydale. On another day, she tells us, a beautiful mild morning, the sun shone, the lake was still, and all the shores reflected in it. This is really full-spectrum living, from the height of literature to baking, gardening, fetching the post, sewing and mending, ironing and sorting linen, and the word she uses for sorting linen is clapping, and also dealing with headaches. Dorothy rolls them all up into balls of life joy and blithely tosses them over the honeysuckle wall of two centuries like a shuttlecock of affirmation and friendship. It feels like reading a letter from someone close, in the detail of whose life you are interested. Again, quoting the journal. Incessant rain from morning till night. T. Ashburner brought us coals, worked hard and read Midsummer Night's Dream, ballads, sauntered a little in the garden. Another day. A very rainy day, I made a shoe. Another day. Miss Simpson came to colour the rooms. I began with whitewashing the ceiling. I worked with them. William was very busy till dinner time, but after dinner I went to bed and fell asleep. There is a lot of gardening too. Dorothy mentions getting hold of plants from what seems to be a nursery, or she goes and finds them in wild places, digs them up and brings them home. And quote a few of these examples. Went to the blind man's for plants. I got such a load that I was obliged to leave my basket in the road and send Molly for it. Planted, etc. I brought home lemon thyme and several other plants and planted them by moonlight. Another day. I rambled on the hill above the house, gathered wild thyme and took up roots of wild columbine. Another day. We pulled apples after dinner, a large basketful. Pulling seems to be picking, what we would say picking apples. Another day, she tells us, I have set Molly on to clear the garden a little, and I myself have helped. I transplanted some snowdrops. The bees are busy. William has a rich, bright day. It was a hard frost in the night. The robins are singing sweetly. Now for my walk. Lovely description also of daffodils, and bearing in mind you may be aware of Wordsworth's poem, her brother Wordsworth's poem about daffodils. She says, I never saw daffodils so beautiful. They grew among the mossy stones about and about them. Some rested their heads upon these stones as on a pillow for weariness, and the rest tossed and reeled and danced and seemed as if they verily laughed with the wind that blew upon them over the lake. They looked so gay, ever glancing, ever changing. She also tells us of her social interactions. She says on one occasion, I dined at Mr. Simpson's and helped Aggie Fleming to quilt a petticoat. I ground paint when I reached home and was tired. William came in just when Molly had left me. It was a mild, rainy evening. He was cool and fresh and smelt sweetly. His clothes were wet. We sat together talking till the first dawning of day, a happy time. That shows the great tumble of daily chores, duties, practical things, mixed in with talking all night with her brother about poetry and literature and other ideas. She somehow just bundles it all together and takes it all in her stride. Occasionally, there is a pang of guilt about uprooting wild plants. In one case, she puts it back, and in another, she resists digging it up in the first place. So here's the first one. I found a strawberry blossom in a rock. The little slender flower had more courage than the green leaves, for they were but half expanded and half grown, but the blossom was fully spread out. I uprooted it rashly, and I felt as if I had been committing an outrage, so I planted it again. It will have a stormy life of it, but let it live if it can. We found Calvert there. I brought a handkerchief full of mosses, which I placed on the chimney piece when C was gone. On another day, she says, we stopped our horse close to the ledge, opposite a tuft of primroses, three flowers in full blossom and a bud. They reared themselves up among the green moss. We debated long whether we should pluck, and at last we left them to live out their day, which I was right glad of, at my return the Sunday following, for they were remained uninjured, either by cold or wet. And she faces the never-ending nature of tending a garden. The roses in the garden are fretted and battered and quite spoiled. The honeysuckle, though in its glory, is sadly teased. The peas are beaten down, the scarlet beans want sticking. The garden is overrun with weeds. If you're a gardener, you've probably had days like that. The journals also reveal details of the rhythm and practicalities of life, which kick into touch the notion of an early 19th century genteel woman with her china cup, tea sipping, delicate diaphana clothing and silk ballet pumps as being somehow fragile. These women work and walk in all weathers. Quoting from the journal, went for eggs into the coombe and to the baker's, a hail shower, brought home large burdens of sticks, a starlight evening, the sky closed in and the ground white with snow before we went to bed. On another day, she tells us, Mary walked to Ambleside for letters. It was a wearisome walk, for the snow lay deep upon the roads and it was beginning to thaw. I stayed home and clapped the small linen. On another day, she says, William's birthday. William went to Middleham. I walked 6 miles with him. It rained a little, but a fine day. Broth to supper and soon went to bed. Dorothy also often mentions baking bread and pies, including a bad one, part of a range of household chores, and going for long walks, either for their own sake or to pick up the post before the advent of last mile delivery. Bear with me and this layer cake of baking notes. There is something in the accretion that engages, and the effortless switch from baking or other domestic tasks to celebrating a singing thrush or a beautiful morning. So here's a few baking quotes. Baked bread and giblet pie, put books in order, mended stockings, put aside dearest C's letters, and now at about 7 o'clock, we are all sitting by a nice fire, W with his book and a candle and Mary writing to Sarah. On another day, she says, I baked bread and pies. Before dinner, worked a little at William's waistcoat. After dinner, read German grammar. That dear thrush was singing upon the topmost of the smooth branches of the ash tree at the top of the orchard. How long it had been perched on that same tree, I cannot tell, but we had heard its dear voice in the orchard the day through, along with a cheerful undersong made by our winter friends, the robins. On another day, she says, I breakfasted in bed, being not very well. Aggie Ashburner helped Molly with the linen. I made veal and gooseberry pies. It was very cold. Thomas Ashburner went for coals for us. There was snow upon the mountain tops. She also records the reading and writing of letters, and the correspondence with their friend Coleridge seems regular and enticing. I am now on the lookout for a good edition. The ease and naturalness of the friendship also shines through, including some very down-to-earth details. So she tells us, in the evening we walked for letters. No letters, no news of Coleridge. Jimmy Benson came home drunk beside us. On another day, after dinner it was agreed that we should walk, when I had finished a letter to C, part of which I had written in the morning by the kitchen fire while the mutton was roasting. She tells us, Coleridge's were very melancholy letters. He had been very ill in his bowels. Then she tells us, I got tea when I reached home and read German till about 9 o'clock. Then Molly went away and I wrote to Coleridge. And then one of her diary entries tells us, Coleridge's bowels bad, mine also. This isn't something you'd normally associate with great romantic era English poets, but she's more down to earth than they are. She fits in a good deal of reading to herself and out loud, including Shakespeare, Chaucer, Milton, Smollett, Ben Jonson, Spencer, Fielding, and Richardson, while learning German and generally supporting her brother, reading his poems back to him, hearing him read them, copying them out, and furnishing him with themes and anecdotes from her life and her journal. She says one day, "We had a deal to do, pens to make, poems to put in order for writing." On another day, she says, "I've been beside him ever since tea, running the heel of a stocking, repeating some of his sonnets to him, listening to his own repeating, reading some of Milton's and all the Allegro and the Penseroso." Dorothy comes across as a happy, self-effacing person, focused on and tender towards the world around her. There is practically no introspection and much generosity of spirit. She seems to have moved in a social milieu that was fluid, open, and relatively informal, with people dropping in for tea or supper and mutual help and support. It lacks the protocol and stiffness we sometimes assume was de rigueur for someone of her class and time. She was mindful before mindfulness and had a strong degree of gratitude. She mentions, I'm quoting from her diary, she says, "When the woman was gone, I could not help thinking that we are not half thankful enough that we are placed in that condition of life in which we are." So I would say of Dorothy, yes, the woman is gone, but she leaves a strong impression of a lively and fully alive person and a warm reminder to be, quote, half thankful enough that we are placed in that condition of life in which we are, unquote. I just wish I could drop in on her for some tea and talk in the orchard and a slice of her apple or gooseberry pie, or accompany her on one of her walks to pick up the post. I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for listening.